The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Fianna Fáil was the first party to launch a manifesto for the general election. In power now for almost 5 years with Fine Gael and the Green Party, they promised to expand the rate of home building, reduce primary school class sizes and hire more Gardaí and much more. Their leader, An Tánaiste Dé Mícheál Martin, is with us now. Tánaiste, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, your manifesto promises to build 60,000 homes per year by 2030, remove delays in planning and speed up construction. How are you going to do that?
Well, we want to get to 60,000 per year by 2030. And the fundamental way we will do that is to invest in infrastructure in the first instance, in water, for example.
Is that the Apple money?
Yeah, we're going to use the Apple money for water infrastructure, which will enable us to get a lot more houses built more quickly. Water connection is important. Wastewater treatment plants are important. Investment in the energy grid as well. Investment in housing itself through the Land Development Agency. And we've already given $1.2 billion in the last budget. And we will ramp that up over the next number of years. Why? Because they can now enable, we can get them to get 25,000 houses built over the next 5 years if we give them the certainty and the multi-annual funding that they require in terms of planning and enabling them to get the projects done. And we need to get on with that in terms of utilising now what we have established. Because Fianna Fáil came in, okay, the Land Development Agency didn't have any legislative underpinning. Took us 2 years to get the legislation up and running. We have local authorities, we've approved housing bodies. Those three are fundamental to building more homes and investing in the infrastructure, in the water system and in housing itself through giving long-term capital commitments, I think enables that planning to take place.
Now, what's the underlying philosophy in Fianna Fáil? Is it more and more social housing, or are you in favour of private ownership? I mean, which would you prefer if you're going to build houses?
It's not an either
owned
or.
Owned privately.
Yeah. It's not an either or. We believe in that the Irish people want to be in a position to be able to afford to buy their own homes or indeed rent their own homes. I believe there has to be a consistent level of social housing built in this country on an annual basis. We will deliver 12,000 social houses made up of about 8,000 plus new builds, the rest then through acquisition or through
leasing.
Which
means the state in all its forms has been competing with the private buyer.
Which is not ideal. So where we want to get to is about 12,000 per annum new builds in social housing and do that on an annual basis. And that will deal with the social housing waiting lists and also take the pressure off the private sector. We want to get to about 10,000 affordable homes per annum that we can build and the private sector to take up the significant remainder. But home ownership is key. And that's why we're saying to young people who are looking to buy houses, we will keep the Help to Buy scheme going till 2030. That enables you to plan properly, that support will be available to you, and the First Home Bridge the Gap scheme, that also will be available to you until 2030. Because young people are saving, they're trying to get a deposit, they need to know these things. Sinn Féin are saying they'd get rid of those things, which I think would crucify first-time buyers. I think, and that's the worry I have with the opposition plans, there's too much uncertainty, disruption and delay in them. I mean, I told you about the Land Development Agency earlier.
You said it took three years.
It took 2 years to legislate.
But why? You guys are in Parliament, so why couldn't you legislate
because
much
it took,
quicker than that?
Because we had, there's lots of sort of complex issues around property and all of that. And to get that, and remember that had been committed a couple of years before that, before we came into office. The point I'm making here is that Sinn Féin are now saying we'll transform or we'll change the Land Development Agency. So they're going to go back to the drawing board. They're going to develop new legislation. All of that means delay, uncertainty, disruption. I'm saying let's get on with it. We have created the foundations in terms of the various schemes that we have established. Now is not the time to go back to the drawing board. Labour and others are talking about new construction
agency. In your launch speech, you talked about the new planning legislation and how it's going to streamline things. There are those critics of it who say it's actually a lawyer's charter. It's going to actually cause more problems because there's an anti-democratic element in it, in that the people who are allowed to ultimately go take the last step, which is judicial review, that has been limited. And it shows a profound misunderstanding, I suppose, as to why people go down that route. It's an expensive route to go. They go down that route because they're desperate, because some monstrosity has been given planning in their area by an out-of-control on board Planola in the past, or by a local council. And that was the issue. You're reforming the wrong thing in that planning bill, and it's probably going to end up more in the courts than ever before.
I disagree with your path there. Fairly fundamentally, I think the democratic thing is, first of all, it's completely in line with all European conventions, and in terms of people's right to object. Many JRs are from people who are living far away from where the project is being delivered. And that, to me, is against the public interest, because housing is a public interest. It's a democratic interest. And look at some of the schemes that have been objected to in Dublin. Years and years of delay. We can't afford that delay. And the Planning Act streamlines the planning system.
The idea of that you have to have a properly constituted residence association and it's got to be in existence for a certain length of time. If the monstrosity suddenly looms upon you, too late to qualify for that and therefore disqualified from going all the way with a legal process, which you've got a right to do.
But Pat, we're not taking away the right to object or indeed to go to judicial review. But there's been far too much delay in our planning system. You talk to anybody, people are exasperated, they're frustrated that it takes years to get a housing scheme through or indeed infrastructural projects through. I was down in a separate issue in Lake Finchina recently where people are destroyed because of the floods there. And the state can't get a pipe across the land because of an objection hundreds of miles away from someone concerned about.
Those kind of spurious objections are clearly.
Well, I mean, they may not be spurious, and they may be a legal thing, but the impact of it is to crucify the people living in the immediate environments there who can't get out their front garden. Because I think JR has been overutilized. I take the point that some of it did stem from bad decisions by Bord Pleanála that were not legally proofed properly. But that part of our Planning Act deals with that. And the Minister has been significantly resourcing Bord Pleanála. Yeah. But in terms of timelines from Bord Pleanála and so on like that, we need to improve the efficiency of all of that.
To the Minister early on in the process when the planning bill was in gestation, that he should go for a rules-based system so everybody knows where they stand. The local authority know where they stand because they've got their overall plan, which has been democratically produced. The developer knows where they stand. The people living there know where they stand. He abandoned that. Instead, you've got the same old planning process. Whereas if you knew, I can build seven stories here because that's the rule. But the rules are there to be broken again and again and again by the board, by local authorities, the rules, and by the minister, by declarations about certain areas, irrespective of the local area plans being, the rules being changed at the last minute.
The county development plans will be, and the city council, the city development plans will be produced, and those plans will outline the zonings and the frameworks and so on. I mean, my experience has been the opposite, Pat. My experience has been that good projects have been delayed far too long.
If you take
Devonny Gardens.
I lived beside it growing up three times in redevelopment. What kind of social housing was built by the corporation at the time that ended up not fit for purpose within a couple of decades and had to be redeveloped and now in a third phase of redevelopment?
Well, where I lived, the local authority housing developed around me has stood the test of time. Superb housing.
Well, the artisans' dwellings.
Fianna Fáil built a lot of them.
The artisans' dwellings near where I grew up stood the test of time, Devonny Gardens, built by the council, did not.
Take your point. And then we spent nearly a decade trying to get it off the ground. That's not good enough either. So there has to be a balance between people's rights, and I think the balances are protected in this Planning Act, but we have to get infrastructure done more quickly and we have to get housing done more quickly.
Yeah. And spending money on infrastructure.
It is the biggest social need in the country.
But the infrastructure is the key that unlocks a lot of housing plans for whatever party.
And I think the water in particular, I've gone around the country, a lot of towns are stuck for the want of a proper wastewater treatment plant. And that's why we're allocating quite substantial capital money to Irish Water on a multi-annual basis, again, Pat, to give that certainty, I think, that people do need and agencies need to plan appropriately and deliver appropriately.
On education, reducing the pupil-teacher ratio at primary level 19 to 1.
Yes.
How is that to be done? I mean, it's 23 to 1 at the moment. So that's an awful lot of teachers.
It is, but I think we've recruited about 7,000 teachers over the last number of years. There will be more. I mean, there's a substantial pipeline in terms of teacher training, both through the Hibernian, through Mary Eyes and so on. So I think we can do that.
And we train them for export.
Not all of them.
Not all, of course not. But I mean, we're losing too many.
I think we have a very strong overall education system. We have a very strong primary system.
According to
terms of the quality, in terms of the quality of Irish teaching, the training is very strong.
Yeah. 951 teacher posts in primary schools and special schools vacant.
Again, but we're looking at an enormous system now with thousands and thousands of teachers recruited. I think there is a problem in Dublin, which is related to the housing issue in terms of the cost of rent and so forth. That is a challenge and that is a problem. I was just in a school yesterday, although they didn't quite cite that as the issue for them. They wanted more teachers, but they also wanted more therapies. And this is a highly disadvantaged area where we're looking at a DESH Plus model, which is in our manifesto, to give. And it was interesting yesterday, we had a mindfulness lesson and myself and Catherine Arda participated in that. And that was interesting because schools are now saying we need different types of skill sets in addition to the teaching skill sets brought into our schools. And that's why, for example, in special needs education, I believe we need to bring the therapies into the schools, bring them back in situ in schools, particularly starting with special schools and with the speech and language therapists, the occupational therapists, physiotherapists. And that sort of multidisciplinary approach will enable us to help children develop from an earlier age much better than currently is the system. But I believe we can recruit the teachers. We have managed to do it over the last number of years with thousands of additional teachers being recruited. And again, there is different. I mean, people look at when you say the national PTR of 23, obviously in some areas where you have high population growth, that can be higher in some classes.
As a former teacher yourself, were you mortally offended by Michael O'Leary?
When I say mortally offended, I was just kind of dismayed at this kind of cavalier denigrating of teachers. And it was also just factually wrong.
He said he liked them, but he liked them in the classroom, not in government.
Yeah, but I've met many teachers who were great entrepreneurs. That's what surprised me. I mean, that's a complete misnomer. He got it wrong. There are some great teachers who moved on from teaching to become great entrepreneurs. Doyle isn't surplus either, by the way. I think about 11% or
12.5%, I think, or something.
It was higher. Requirements. It was higher historically in the past. And you think of people like John Wilson and the late Mary O'Rourke. They made, I think, very significant contributions to public service, and they were teachers. I think the chairing and all of that was problematic for Fine Gael. And I come from a tradition which always exalted the teacher. And in terms of the evolution of Irish society, you know, in earlier times, the teacher was one of the key personalities in a village or in a town.
Sure. I'm just wondering, though, in terms of education, we're talking about maybe dumbing down the Leaving Cert a bit more. One paper in English instead of two, and possibly one paper in mathematics instead of two, at a time when project work can be done by your friendly AI.
I'd have concerns about that myself. I would agree with you there. I think we need to be careful of that. Because that said, when I go into schools, and I go into schools a lot, the young people are much more confident, actually, maybe than we were at that comparable age back in school.
But literacy is a problem. I mean, we get people in here coming in from college even, and some of the literacy skills are lacking.
Even though we score high internationally, and there's not the same emphasis on grammar maybe today as there would have been when I was going through school. But generally speaking, it depends on what type of young person do you want to come out of our schools. And I think we do want creative thinkers. We want people who can be self-reliant, who can think independently, who can have critical inquiry skills, as well as having the good literacy, obviously, and numeracy as well. And I think, generally speaking, our standards are high internationally. We can always do better and we must do better. And that's why investment in education is critical. And I think we always, one good thing about Ireland, the teaching profession has always been held in very high esteem out there. We need to maintain that. I think education was the bedrock of the Irish economy. We started doing it properly in Ireland in the 60s. And it yielded tremendous dividends in terms of economic transformation. And that's
central. Now, I want to move on to health, because one of the planks of your manifesto is establish rapid access outpatient clinics, open an additional 12 injury units, increase emergency medicine consultants and acute psychiatric bed provision. All very good ideas. But you and I go back a long way. And I remember you as Minister for Health promising us these medical centres all around the country, which would be where you could go and get a quick x-ray of your broken leg and get it plastered up and be dispatched on your way without ever going near A&E. That process faltered. I mean, there's maybe a few of them around the place, but now we have the teams who don't have a headquarters. They talk to each other on the telephone.
Well, the primary care units have now come through. It took longer than perhaps we would have envisaged at the time, but the whole emphasis of the health strategy that we published.
But some of them, they're open until 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and then they close.
700 not primary care centres. No, at the time we had very little. So that transformation has happened a bit longer than I would have liked, but it is happening.
But some of them are primary care teams. They don't actually exist in bricks and mortar.
But a lot are in bricks and mortar. Some are teams. But I think we have reached the stage of critical mass in terms of those teams. And I think Stephen Donnelly, to be fair, has added to it in terms of diagnostics and the capacity to do a lot more diagnostics through the GP system. And also, there's some fantastic facilities now, Pat, out there in terms of outpatient facilities. I just opened them in Galway recently in Maryland Park, or indeed in Ballincollig and Cork in terms of ophthalmology and so forth, and a wide range of services to deal with chronic diseases. The Enhanced Community Care Programme of the last number of years is a revolution and needs to be added to and invested in.
You promised 5,000 more Gardaí. Can Temple Moor take that kind of recruitment? Does it have the space and the resource?
I think we'll have to look at additionality in addition to Temple Moor and expand, and also look at different modules and different programs in terms of how we recruit Gardaí and how we develop Gardaí and so forth, and trainee Gardaís and that. We do it in all other aspects of education and training. To a certain extent, it's lacked a bit of radical innovation in terms of training for Gardaí. And I think we can sweat the asset more in Temple Moor. There will be additionality there. We can invest more in Temple Moor to get a higher throughput. It's one of the biggest issues around the country that doesn't quite manifest itself all of the time in research and so on like that. But more and more people do not feel safe in towns and in urban areas and cities. And that's a recurring sort of theme when you talk to people.
Okay, so we were talking about maybe we needing 13,000 Gardaí, then 14,000 Gardaí. Our population is growing all the time, and the complexity of our social order problems growing all the time. So maybe 20,000 Gardaí is more on target for what this size population means. But there's something underlying all the things we've talked about. For building, we need more people. For teaching, we need more people. Mm. For health, we need more people. For justice, we need more Gardaí. Where are all these people going to come from?
Well, I think, first of all, we are growing, Pat. I mean, this is an historic sort of timeline in Irish history. Like that sort of depopulation of Ireland from the famine onwards has really only been arrested in the last 20-odd years, 30 years.
On the island, we're heading to where we were in pre-famine times.
Yeah, which I think is very interesting, as wearing a sort of historian's hat. We're now on the island heading back to where we were at famine times, but much more sustainably than then, obviously. So we've got to we have to develop a vision for an increased population. And we have to accept the reality of that. And I was in Apple recently in Cork, who employ about 6,000 people, and it's quite interesting. About 60% are Irish. 20% are from within the European Union, the workers who've come in here. A further 20% from outside of the European Union who've come in to work with Apple. So Ireland has become a location for people to come to secure high quality jobs, in addition to Irish people securing those jobs as well. And that's what is happening. But to sustain that, you do need to expand public services, and you do need to recruit people using our work permit system and high skill work permit system and so on, in addition to training and education, Irish people to fulfil those jobs. Okay. So we have full employment, and that in itself is causing a lot of stresses and pressures.
And a couple of things. Are you concerned, the Apples of the world, the Intels, the Microsofts and all of that, with Trump coming to power and maybe wanting to onshore a lot of American activity back to the United States?
I am concerned. I think we can withstand some of that because many of these companies are deeply embedded in Ireland and are key locations for them and very reliable companies for them to access the EMEA region, Europe and Asia, but also they do good jobs. I mean, I saw that during COVID when I met the heads of Boston Scientific and Medtronic. They said to me, Ireland was one of the few places in the world that kept production going in medical devices and these big companies. They're not going to get rid of that reliability, skilled workforce and lose that
asset. You think they'll just say, it's only 4 years of your man?
I think there'll be a bit of that. But they see Ireland as an asset to their companies. We add value to these companies. Now, where I am particularly worried, and I think we are in for turbulent times, I think the tariff issue, and if the president proceeds with tariffs, and Europe will have to respond, China will get involved, we could be looking at an era of protectionism unlike anything we've seen for quite a long
time.
I'm
not sure the president understands.
And for a small open economy for Ireland, that's dangerous and that could be damaging.
I'm not sure the president understands the complexity of modern supply chains, by the way, which give him pause for thought.
But, and it's not just, like, to be fair, we kind of always put these issues into one individual. But during the COVID-19, President Biden brought in the protectionist approach to vaccines. And Europe was about to do the same thing. Now, because of our experience here, I intervened and the Belgians intervened and says, you cannot ban, you can't create export authorizations or banning exports of vaccines and so on. Because you're correct. I mean, the J&J vaccine, South Africa was doing the fill and finish. There was about 30 or 40 components in a vaccine, maybe 10, 15 countries having a piece in all of it. So you're right. The complexity of modern day supply chains may impact on him, or the corporates may get to President Trump as well. I may say to him, look, this isn't doable, and you're going to weaken American companies if you pursue some of these policies.
Now, inheritance tax, you promised there will be some alleviation of the burden of inheritance tax. How far do you want to go in terms of an exemption?
Well, we want to go, first of all, in terms of families, and we've outlined it in the budget, incrementally increasing the thresholds.
But my question is, how far do you want to go? I mean, some people say that house was built with after-tax money, maybe a little help from mortgage relief from the state, but by and large, people's own labour.
I agree with the sentiment. I agree with that philosophy.
So therefore, the state shouldn't be taking a whack of a hard-earned asset.
Shouldn't be taking a disproportionate amount, because people, this is...
Well, what's a proportionate amount?
I think we'd go back to, I'd like to go back to 25% as a rate, and also increase the thresholds, and particularly look at specific areas. You know, there's a number of categories, A, B and C and so forth.
You see, because that little house that was bought maybe for 60 grand now maybe worth a million, and and therefore if there's one inheritor, they have to sell the house in order to inherit it.
It's not, I don't think it's fair. That's my approach to life. I think many people pay, and say you earn certain, you know, we have a progressive tax system, those in the highest incomes pay the most. You kind of work hard, you don't overspend in your life, you save, you buy a house. The house increases in value. Should your children be punished for the fact that it's gone up in valuation and they find it impossible, you know, when they inherit something
Last question, I know we're running out of time. The last question is about a U-turn on decriminalisation of all drugs for personal use. Now it's only cannabis.
Well, it's not quite a U-turn. I mean, it was a clarification. Although I would, look, by the way, I'm surprised Fine Gael have come out to attack it, because Hildegard Nocton said something similar last January, that people shouldn't have to go through the criminal justice system for personal use. I think cannabis is one where we could start this. There's been a good discussion in the Oireachtas for the last 4 years on the Oireachtas Committee, the Citizens Assembly, likewise. Having been a former Minister for Health, understanding addiction over that period and through life itself, my life experience tells me addiction cannot be solved by the criminal justice system. Addiction has to be solved by a health-led approach and rebuilding people's lives and dealing with addiction, dealing with the source of the addiction, and trying to rebuild people's lives and their families. And I just feel the criminal justice route, that's over in terms of its efficacy and impact. We have to be much more proactive in terms of a health-led approach.
Donáiste and Micheál Martin, thank you very much for joining us in studio. Back on the campaign trail now.
Thank you, Pat. Yeah.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.